Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, yo, speed my rants and gems. Speed my rants and gems. Gems. Y'all can do it, we discover. Peace to all the kings and the queens, where the mother lie. Speed my rants and gems. Speed my rants and gems. Gems. Y'all can do it, we discover. Peace to all the kings and the queens, where the mother lie.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Rants and Gems. My name is Matt Garland, NMLS number 58700, but better known as International MG.
And my name is Kiana Watson, license number 317576, and I am also known as International Broker Extraordinaire.
Yes, 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 and we're back with another dynamic episode
of the Rants and Gems show.
Yes, yes.
Hey, you guys, we are coming to you live from London, and we were wondering, why aren't they a part of our community?
Look, if you're not part of the Rants and Gems gym dropping community, you're doing yourself a tremendous disservice. We got live events, behind the scenes, live Q&As with our guests. You need to be a part of the community.
You got to be a part of this community so you can ask questions to all of our guests, so you can interact with us, vibe with us, get exclusive behind the scenes footage. I mean, we're going to have everything you need in our community, so y'all stop asking questions on Instagram and join our community so you can get the real answers.
Exactly. So link is in the bio. Join the Rants and Gems certified gym dropper community today. Get behind the scenes action, live Q&As, free access to all of our live pop-ups, and the Rants and Gems live experience tour. So don't wait, don't hesitate. Link in the bio. Join today.
See you soon, gym droppers.
Peace.
So today we have Anthony. Of course, I know this name, right? But we have Anthony here, and he is doing some great things here in London. He is developing communities, developing projects, mm-hmm. and he works a lot with student housing. And they call him Mr. Big Deals.
They damn sure did. As soon as he came in, they said Mr. Big Deals is here.
Like Mr. Big Deals only.
Like they was about to throw the rose petal at his feet and everything.
Everything.
I said, we got the King of London over here.
That's what I feel like. So, you know, it's an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. And we just want to hear a little bit more about, you know, when did you fall in love with real estate?
Well, back when I was a property manager, I started to realize that the ones that were actually making the money were the were the owners of the property, the mm-hmm. landlords, the owners of it, the developers. And then so we started to do this thing called rent to rent. I think you call it house hacking or something in the US.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So we started as a company leasing these properties and then making larger cash flows. So instead of making just a management fee every month, we were making, you know, a larger amount. So if we leased it from the landlord for £1,000 a month, we'd then go and rent it to the occupiers, say students, for £2,000 a month, so we'd make £1,000. Obviously there's voids and maintenance and things that you need to take into account, but that's much better than having a, you know, a £200 management fee.
Yeah.
So we started to ramp up that way. So it's a cash flow. When I understood the cash flow, that's when we started to take it a lot more seriously.
And that's when you fell in love. Like, damn, let me stop managing properties and let me go own my own damn properties.
Make some real money. Yeah.
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 I like that. So, but your property manager experience, how did that help you now transition, like, and help you run all your properties today?
That experience was good. So managing, I didn't come from a property management background when I started it. I started a business finding tenants for landlords, student tenants for landlords. And then I got into management that way for my own business. And so you make a bit of mistakes, unfortunately, mm-hmm. on other people's properties. So by the time it came to my own properties, mm-hmm. I was good. So it's for the experiences. The experiences you get to that position where you know what the market wants. You know how to look after the properties. You know how to deal with the maintenance. You know how to deal with the residents. And you kind of just put systems in place and people in place to run that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now with you, you know, you're more of a buy and hold investor,
yeah.
right? So you want long term cash flow. You're not looking for a quick fix and flip, right? So your first deal was just a regular home, right? That you purchased, and then you scaled that up. So one of your first big deals was a 48 unit project.
Correct.
Let's talk about that. How did you go from regular home to 48 units?
During that period, I was still a property manager, agent, letting agent, and just started getting into investing into property. Mm-hmm. And I knew from my experience as a property manager, I needed to own number one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I get to benefit from any capital appreciation. The value's going up, that's mine, opposed to if I'm leasing it, it's the main owner that gets that benefit.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had to do that. And I also knew that I wanted to manage properties in one location. So as a property manager, we also managed apartment buildings.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot easier to manage that apartment building opposed to managing, you know, 50 apartments in one building is a lot easier than managing 50 different houses.
Yeah.
50 different locations, you know, you've mm-hmm. got 50 boilers,
yeah.
50 roofs.
Yeah.
You know, the list goes on. Whereas an apartment building, you've got one roof.
Yeah.
Ah.
One door.
Yeah.
And you got 50 apartments within, you know, one main entrance door, the main entrance, and you got these 50 apartments within it. So I knew I had to basically own something big and own it long term. So then I got to the point where I realized, shit, I'm going to have to build this. That's the cheapest way for me to acquire this is through building it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was more of I worked out over time that this is what I need to do, build it, own it, and then rent it out and have bigger cash flow from one asset.
Mm.
Now, Anthony, you're making it sound too easy. You're making it sound way too easy. You know what? I just decided to build a 48 unit. And, like, let's talk about it a little bit more. Yeah. Like, awesome. What? Like, someone that, like, people have a hard enough time wrapping their minds around just building one property,
yeah.
let alone yeah. a apartment community or a flat community. How would you guys call it here?
Apartment building.
Okay, so let's just talk about, can you give us like three easy steps that it took to really start that?
Steps.
Three steps, just three of the first steps.
Three steps. Look, so if you want to build something from scratch, the first thing you need is a site, you need a location, you need a potential development opportunity. So the first thing you need to do is work out what you want to build. Once you work out what you want to build, then that will determine what location you want to be in. So if you want to build a residential apartment building, then you want somewhere where there's a demand for residential apartments.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're building in a central location, say the center of London, and you know there's a good demand for renting apartments, then you should be okay. So once you're in that area, once you've identified the area, look for a potential development site. It could be an old industrial building, it could be a car park, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Find that piece of land or that potential opportunity and then work out with an architect how many units you're likely to be able to build there.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that, then you need to work out the value of what that could be worth later on. So that's done through looking at comparable sales, see what apartments sell for, rent for, and then using that to work out what the end value of that project would be once it's built out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work backwards and work out what the development cost would be, minus your development profit. That then dictates what you pay for the land, and then
Put the offer in
and then follow up, keep following up until the deal's done. And then construction is a whole other process.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of parts to it, and I don't, just one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Don't worry about the other stuff.
Yeah.
The first thing you need to do is find a site.
Find a site, yeah.
And then once you found a site, then find an architect. People overcomplicate things, and that's, I guess, one of my strengths is I don't it's sequential. What this bit, yeah, then that bit. I don't worry about who my contractor's going to be. I don't even have a site. If I don't have a site.
Yeah.
Mm. But people worry about who their contractor's going to be before they even have a development site.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that.
So, yeah.
So when you find your site, you find your architect, right? And I find that sometimes it's difficult. People don't know how to find an architect, right? So how do you, like, especially here in the UK, someone's watching this episode, how do you go about finding the right architect? Because you need someone who's really, like, they know their stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Right? Because a lot of people say they do it, but they really have no clue, especially when you're talking about scaling at that level. How do you find the right architect that works with this size of development?
One of the things if you're fresh and you don't have the network to get referrals, so if you can't call somebody you know and ask them for a referral, one of the great ways to do it is look for sites that have already been approved for the kind of development you want in the area that you need it. So if you're looking in central London, say, you can look on, it's online, all the information, you must have it the same in the US, all information for sites that have been approved, any planning applications are online in some form. And so look online and see what applications have been approved, and see who the architect was on that site, and then contact those architects. Pretty straightforward.
Easy. Yeah. Easy peasy.
It's like it's sitting in your face.
Don't overcomplicate.
Right, yeah, you're exactly. Right.
Just look online. See what permits are approved. Or, like, you can go to building sites. And I know in America, they'll have, like in front of the building site, they'll have, like, the rendering. And they'll have, like, the architect names and everything like that. That's another way you can go about finding the architect. Now, how do you get funding? Because I know you ain't using all your money to build these properties. So how do you go about getting funding? Are you getting private money from private investors? Are you using, like, construction loans? Like, how are you getting these projects built?
It's pretty much like you said. So it's a mixture of investment funds and a mixture of development finance.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a project if I've got a £10 million project and I require £1 million in investment funds, then those funds can be raised from an investor, say, who puts up £1 million. And if it's £6 million for the construction, then you can raise the money from the development finance. Mm-hmm. Just depends on the deal and the criteria from the development lender, how much money they want you to have in the game, skin in the game, as it were. So it's a mixture, private investors and development. But I'm looking at alternative means. I'm open to a fund, so I'm currently thinking about setting up a fund so we don't have a requirement to keep going back to investors and raising individually. So that's something we're looking into currently. But
how do you set up a fund?
No idea, I'm looking into it.
I love it.
I know a few people that have funds, and so I'm just going to lean on them. Funnily enough, I had a meeting yesterday about it in London with a big private equity investor who has a large fund. So that's one of the things we discussed, but I'm just going to dig deep into it.
Just dig deep and just go see where
it goes. Using your relationships, basically.
Research. I've read a couple of books on it. To be fair, just ask the right questions. I never try to overcomplicate things. When I find out about something, I ask around.
Right.
People that I think that will be in the know, and I read some information on it, articles, books.
Let me ask you a question. So right now you're working on a really big project. I was just, of course, y'all know I love me some Instagram. I was scrolling your page and I said, wait a minute, let me stop. You're standing in front of a huge building. Can you tell us more about this current project you're working on and just tell us more about your company?
Yeah, so my company is a volume property. We're a development and investment company. So we find sites from that don't have planning. We take it from planning right through to build it out and then rent them out.
Mm-hmm.
So that one that you saw on Instagram is 70 units, so it's student accommodation, 70 self-contained apartments. And it's in the central of Birmingham City Centre. What else do you want to know? The rent will probably produce in the region of about £650,000 per year from that building.
That's what we want to know.
650,000 pounds per year.
That's what gross. We wanted to know.
Yeah, gross. Yeah.
Off of 17, off of
70.
70. Yeah. Oh, I'm about to say over $17. Like, look, I got a couple dollars. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they're dollars. Exactly. You know, the pound is stronger, but like, right. Can I invest in this shit too? Like, damn.
Nice. Yeah, that's what we want to know. 70 units, 650,000 pounds per year.
Yeah, it's about £9 million GDV. Gross development value. So yeah,
that's a big
amazing.
Project.
That's now, a huge project.
You're a fan of student housing, right? Like, how did you get? What made you go to student housing versus like doing regular cash tenants?
Yeah, good question. So I when I was studying at university, towards my end of my first year, actually, I met a landlord who was renting their house out to students, so me and my friends went to go mm-hmm. and view houses to see which houses we'd live in for the following year.
Uh-huh.
So on the first year at university in the UK, you normally live on campus, and then your second year onwards, you'll usually look for accommodation elsewhere. So I met a landlord, I knew she wanted tenants, so I said to her, I can find you tenants for your other houses. She agreed, and so I was just trying to make some money. It was just a bit of a hustle,
yeah.
I guess. So I was trying to make money by finding students for these landlords. I knew the students because they were at uni. And so that's how it started. So it was just chance that I was trying to make money. I've always been, you know, someone that's tried to make a bit of money. And so then I took that and started managing properties. When I graduated from university, I did it full time. I had clients ready. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really make any money.
You do it all without breaking a sweat. And you do it all in style. From being a boss exec to getting the kids ready for school, checking homework, family dinners, lunches and brunches with your day ones, trips to the salon, and weekend getaways are anything but a getaway. That's why Infiniti fully reimagined the QX60 to help you conquer it all with ease. A luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish, and as versatile as it is serene. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' basketball practices, not to mention your side hustles, it's all done with grace. The all-new Infiniti QX60 has available features like seating for up to 7 passengers, a suite of active safety features, and massaging front seats. It's the SUV designed to help you conquer life in style. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
Also, I was at university. I didn't really make much money at all. But when I graduated, I did it full-time. I had the clients ready. So then I started lettings and management. Mm-hmm. And then whilst doing that, that's when I realized, shit, the real people make it, you know, the real money is coming from the owners. I need to own property. Can't keep leasing these properties or managing them.
Yeah.
Because what I ended up doing was started to make some decent money. Then you've got to start recruiting staff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then that takes the cash flow down. And then you got to get more properties to cover that. And then it's just like a cycle. So where's the actual big win? Big win comes from the ownership. So that's how we got to that point where mm-hmm. I realized. So it's a kind of a progression. Mm-hmm. I've realized, all right, I need to do that next, and I'd go and get information, ask around. I didn't know the difference between an architect and a planning consultant.
Mm. Oh.
I had no idea.
Have no idea. Tell our people what the difference is.
So if you speak to someone in development now, it sounds crazy. A planning consultant is someone that just has planning knowledge and planning expertise on planning law and planning policy. So they'll advise you on what's possible and not.
You do it all without breaking a sweat. And you do it all in style. From being a boss exec to getting the kids ready for school, checking homework, family dinners, lunches and brunches with your day ones, trips to the salon, and weekend getaways are anything but a getaway. That's why Infiniti fully reimagined the QX60 to help you conquer it all with ease. A luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish, and as versatile as it is serene. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' basketball practices, not to mention your side hustles, it's all done with grace. The all-new Infiniti QX60 has available features like seating for up to 7 passengers, a suite of active safety features, and massaging front seats. It's the SUV designed to help you conquer life in style. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
Architect is someone who designs the building. So they're different roles. So I went to a planning consultant at first thinking they could design I had no idea. This is what, I've got I started with no contacts and no experience at all. I just knew there's a site there and I want to do something. So I just asked around.
So you had to get the planning consultant and the architect.
So I didn't even need that planning consultant in the end, because a planning consultant is really needed when the site's a bit more complex.
Okay.
So when it's not straightforward, that's when you get a planning consultant in to advise you and the architect on the approach.
Got it.
But you don't even need a planning consultant. It depends on the deal. When they get larger, you tend to need them because they're more a bit more contentious and a bit more complicated.
So at this point, how many apartment buildings have you all built?
We're on number 4.
And how much in total volume?
Volume?
Yeah,
value.
Like as far as value, yeah. Total value.
So we're on, at the moment we've got 20 million in construction under development.
Wow.
We finished one last year, which was £6.5 million development.
All of these are buying, you're developing them, and now you're just rent them.
For now.
I have a question.
For now, so that's the intention.
Okay.
So how often, like right now, of course the end goal is to have them pre-leased. So that's what your company does? You pre-lease a lot of these to the student housing, or do you wait until it's done?
No, that's exactly right. So you've got to start pre-leasing or pre-letting them before the building's finished, because you're going to find yourself with a building
when no cash flow.
And some people make that mistake. Some developers, even just like when you build a property to sell, you've got to start selling it before it's built. So yeah, we pre-let it, and we do really nice fancy CGI renders and let it that way.
I saw some of your renderings on your
page.
Yeah. Yes. That's why I had to ask. I'm figuring, I'm like, I see the renderings, and you can sell off the renderings and just the location in itself. And people want to be the first. And of course, prices go up as, homes stay on the market.
But how difficult is that if you're targeting student housing, right? Because these students, they're students, right? They're going to university. So they're not, this is not a long term. So like, how do you really like hone in and like capture that student to really get into your apartment when it could take a year or 18 months to fully have it ready?
Good question. So some of them are nervous. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them are maybe that nervous that they don't book because they think the building may not be ready. So that's one part of it. Some of it's about building up a brand. So one thing that we're a stickler for is those CGIs need to look, that building needs to look just like those CGI images. And a lot of the industry in student accommodation, generally, they underperform or underdeliver on when they sell the images. This is what it will look like. They underperform, and it doesn't look like what the student bought into. So by the time they move in, they're disappointed.
I'm catfishing them.
It's a big catfish.
Basically get catfished. Exactly it. So we're very intentional in that we want it to be better than the CGI, and the CGI images are great. So. If you check on our website, on my Instagram, you can see they're really nice images, but we deliver on those images. So we make sure it's just like that. So that helps. Mm-hmm. That helps. So if they know that you're going to deliver on what you say, and you know what, if you don't, they'll let everybody know.
Yeah, they definitely will.
They always say that bad news travels fast.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So people can have a good experience and may not even tell anyone.
No one.
And especially not the internet on the reviews.
Right.
But bad experience, everyone's going to know about it. So it's a challenge, and you've got to be on your A game, haven't you? You've got to be on your A game.
So with you owning these buildings, like, what is your end goal? Like, what is the big picture for you? Because now we're at these huge buildings, apartment buildings. You're saying you're holding them. You don't know if you're going to ever want to sell them. Like, what are your thoughts?
The goal right now is to build up quite a large portfolio. So. I actually think these buildings are small, so you're probably going to think I'm crazy. So 70 flats in the student accommodation industry in the UK is small. You're on the smaller side.
Yeah.
So we've got, there's one that we've got under construction, which is the second phase of the 48 flat one.
Okay.
So once that's finished, it'll be 150 six altogether. And we've got phase 3. And once that's finished, it'll be over 270 beds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's once it gets to 270, that's a proper size student accommodation block, so that's over a £30 million building at that stage. I think it's actually It's probably closer to 35 with the amount of studios we have in there. So we're looking to do more deals like that, build up a larger portfolio, and then we'll make a decision at that point as to whether we continue with it or we sell. But the portfolio's got to get bigger, because as it gets bigger, that cap rate, you can drop it because there's a premium when you're selling a portfolio.
Yeah.
You're selling an individual property, it might be whatever it is, you know, 6%, 6.5%. But if you've got, you know, if you've got a huge portfolio of a few thousand beds,
of course,
you could get 4.5%, 5%. And that, as you know, that 1% on the cap rate is absolutely massive, especially when you're dealing with deals this size.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely.
Makes or breaks you.
Millions and millions.
Yeah, it can make or break you.
Oh, massively. So, look, £1 million, if you're getting £1 million net, and these buildings are valued on net rent, they're not valued on an individual flat or whatever it is. It's valued on how much rent do you get in for the building, what does it cost to operate that building, and what rent are you left with? That's what you use then to put your cap rate against. So if you've got £1 million net rent and your cap rate 6%, that building's worth 16.7 million.
Yeah.
If you've got a cap rate of 5%, that building's worth 20 million. So that value, by just changing the valuation,
it just switches up. It
switches right there.
Over £3 million. So it's
a no-brainer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So intention is really, if you're in my sector, a lot of the transactions are where developers or owners will build up a portfolio and then sell it to like a Blackstone or Blackstone.
Yeah,
of course 100%. We do.
So you'd sell it to a big institution that are looking to buy.
So that may be the bigger play for you.
It's got to be.
We're
here for it.
100%.
It's got to be.
There's no other way.
There's no other way.
There's no other reason to be doing this. Go big or go bigger is what they say, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this though, right? COVID, supply issues, raising construction costs for just the supplies, the lumber, the steel.
Yeah.
How are you guys managing that, and how are you saving money? Because I know you're saving money. You're dressing sharp over here, brother. So I know you're saving
clean.
Some money. You clean as hell.
I think about that a lot. Construction costs are just absolutely crazy. And so one of the ways is trying to have a good relationship with the contractor and making sure everything's clear and open. Ideally, if you can have an open book relationship with the contractor so you can see what's actually being paid, that's ideal. Making sure you've got enough margin. If you've paid the right price to begin with for the land and you haven't overpaid, then ideally there's some margin there just in case. Well, they're likely to go up, especially in this. I mean, it's happening worldwide, isn't it? Construction costs are going crazy. So as the costs increase and your margin gets squeezed, if you've paid the right price for the land, then there should be a little juice there to try and shelter against the cost overruns. But it's a we're very conscious of that, and it's a big topic. It's huge.
It's a huge topic.
No, it's definitely
huge. Have you experienced any delays on any of your projects because of the supply? I'm seeing that a lot in America.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that we had issues on that 70 apartment scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So that was meant to be finished in August last year. But the contractor got into issues. So we used the main contractor. So we use main contractors, normally in a design and build contract, where we put the whole contract with them and they're responsible for delivering the project with subcontractors.
Yeah.
They got into issues on other projects and finances, and there was a delay. So that project's now set to be finished in May.
Mm-hmm.
So we're close now. We're near the end, fortunately. But no, it happens. And
yeah,
they cited COVID. But, you know, really good contractors can work their way around it. They can get really organized and they can work through the issues. And so I think if your operation wasn't that great to begin with, and we did great due diligence, the bank did great due diligence, because they're not going to lend money without doing the proper DD.
Absolutely.
It happens. So it's a concern.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of contractors. I'm not sure what it's like in the US, but in the UK, there's a lot of contractors.
Same thing.
And there's a lot going bust.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot going bust. One minute they look good.
Next minute you can't find them.
And that happened
to
like a client of an agent I know. They built like $2 million house. They gave him like $200,000, and then they just ran off, went bankrupt, filed bankruptcy, and just disappeared. And so it's like, there's no, is there like a book of business? Like we have like the Better Business Bureau. We have certain things. Like what would someone look for to really find a good contractor? Because that's like, everybody's looking for that.
Absolutely.
Once you find out, let me
know. You know what? Let's cheers to that. Because that right there.
Yeah.
Because we both know that's what everybody wants to know. We never know.
When we all find out, we'll let you all know. Because we know, look, contractors are con tractors. So you got to be very careful.
Yeah.
It's a working relationship, isn't it? Finding people you can trust. But you can do a lot of due diligence. You can look at their financials. You can look at their books, mm-hmm. their last 3 years' accounts, and the forecast. But if they're on issues on their other jobs, so I don't know what it's called in the UK. It's called liquidated damages. So if they're late, you get to charge them a penalty.
Yes, we can do that too.
So you have that in your contract?
Yeah.
Just like we have in our contract.
Yeah.
So if that contractor delivers it late, they're going to get hit a penalty every week or every day that rate goes up. And so if they run into issues on their other projects, how are we to know? They're not going to tell us. So unless we physically visit those projects and get on site, which is, you know, so how feasible is it? I don't know. Maybe I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
If they're running into financial issues on 3 or 4 other jobs, and they're huge jobs, if they're 30, 40 million pound jobs or 20 million pound jobs, and their LADs are liquidated damages are 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 grand a week, that could wipe a contractor out because they don't work on huge margins.
Yeah.
They work on, well, they're meant to work on 5-ish%, but some of them will aim for 10. Yeah. So if they're working on between a 5-10% margin on a 20 million pound build, say, it's only 2 million quid.
Yeah.
So a lot can go wrong.
Absolutely.
So it's a difficult, it's a crazy business.
Yeah. Margins. Yeah,
exactly.
I like that you said that though. You just gave a gym and didn't even recognize it. You said maybe it would be feasible to visit their previous sites. Like, because you already did the
current sites.
The ones that you were already, so you already vetted these people anyway. So to visit and see, okay, let me see what's happening with their projects because whatever's happening with their other projects can affect yours.
Yeah.
That's a gym.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's probably regular visits as well, maybe. Oh,
I agree.
How'd you get in?
Yeah.
Regular visits to the other sites because they could be good to begin with, but
if your
build is 18-month build, they could get in issues 9 months down the line
as your
project. So then that impacts you near the end of your project.
Mm.
So it gets interesting, doesn't it? It's a crazy game. My biggest concern is the contractor.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working on a quite a decent sized deal in the background. It's about 40 million GDV. Big student, another student scheme. So we don't just do student, but we started in student, and so they're the ones that are coming through first. We do residential apartments and other things, social housing. But even on that one, I met with the contractor on site, and they were like, "Oh, it's great that you're doing this project." And I was like, "Well, this comes down to you."
Yeah.
I can put everything in place.
Yeah.
But it's the contractor is a key part of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that can really mess the whole thing
They're
up.
They're gonna make or break it.
I can line up the financing, I can line up the team. But if the contractor doesn't deliver,
it's nothing else you can do.
You're in a situation.
Look, man, I know we pressed for time. You got meetings today, so okay. I know.
Look,
we appreciate every minute that you gave us today. We can't let you leave without giving us one final rant and one more gem for our audience.
Rant, I'd say, I think a lot of people, especially our people, don't think big enough. They, for some reason, they think it's not them. They think it's other people that are, it's good for them. Why not you? Mm. Why not you? Why not? Why is it not your time? Why are you not capable to do that? I want to not thinking big enough, I'd say.
Think bigger.
Yeah, yes. Think much bigger and act on it.
And what's your gem?
Gem. I'd say team. Surround yourself with a good team. It's just like a football team. If you start with a good team, you start and then you recruit your team, you recruit your players.
Yeah.
Someone's not good, what do you do?
Cut them. Gotta go.
And get someone else in.
Yeah. Right.
Don't keep them on just because they're your starting team.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
So it's just that and then keep improving on your team. So surround yourself with the right people, get the right team in, and be willing to have those difficult conversations and cut people that are not cutting it, and keep the ones that are great.
Hire fast and fire faster.
Yeah.
I like right. that. So Anthony, tell them how to find you.
Look, you can check me out on Instagram, search Anthony Laville, on YouTube as well, and TikTok and all the socials. It's all my name, full name, Anthony Laville.
Look, this Love was a dope episode.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for Thank your you. Time today. I know you're extremely busy. You got big deals happening, big deals meetings happening. So we appreciate you stopping by today on location at Stork Restaurant here in London. So thank you for your time, Kiana. This was another dope episode.
It was an amazing
I'm loving
episode.
This London real estate.
Like, I'm loving the London real estate. I mean, I always wanted to build my own apartment community. So just talking to you, it's so much motivation
Absolutely.
In itself and so Absolutely. Much information just to act upon it. So I just want to tell you guys, thank you so much. My name is Kiana Watson. License number 317576, broker extraordinaire, hashtag international Q.
International Q. I like that one. Matt Garland here, NMLS number 58700, international MG. Hashtag that shit. All right,
Thank
we
you
out
guys.
Of here.
Thank you Peace. Guys for tuning in to another episode of the Rants and Gems show.
Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.